Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Newton's second law of motion, that an object will accelerate dependent on the force applied on it and dependent inversely on the mass. Now, I'm going to discuss that. I've been talking about the different laws of motion, how they came across, and how Newton lived in a time of when there were no equations. In fact, I quite honestly don't believe he stated that really clearly anywhere in Principia. It's hard to say, and of course, it was written in Latin. The word times is conjugate. It's an interpretation that we've got forward. And since then, we've developed, he had the word an action, and he more discussed at things, rather than acceleration, he said gaining momentum, the rate of increase of momentum, if you actually do read into it. But we're going to go from the standardized school book definition. So Newton's first law is the law of inertia. The second law is the law of force and acceleration. And both those terms really flowered and developed the idea of mass. In this second law, we now introduce the law of mass. The last law, we morphed from the last law, which is the first law. The last law we talked about, this is Newton's first law of inertia, is that an object at rest will remain at rest, and an object in motion will remain in motion along a straight line unless a force acts upon it. We morph that slowly by talking about equations with subscripts. A acceleration of a body. The acceleration subscript body equals zero if F subscript onto the body, forces onto the body, equals zero. So we developed last time the concept of acceleration. Acceleration being the rate of change of velocity. Velocity future minus velocity past divided by the time between the future and the past. If you want to talk about two different groups of time, we discussed that last time. Now we're going to move ever so slowly around this. So there's a long-handed write-up, which is in terms of acceleration. And now, from my reading of Newton, I think he discussed more momentum, and he really tiptoed around the meaning of mass. He referred mass back to Giles of Rome, which we could pronounce it the way Europeans do it. Giles of Rome for his definition of mass, and then he, as best as I can find, described mass in terms of density and volume. So if something is the same volume, it's got a greater density, therefore it's got a greater mass. He had that way. He really didn't really get into mass that way, but he did discuss momentum. So look, it's coming from this very woolly past of Newton describing things verbally in a time that's verbal across, and we have this idea that he stated these laws, which is basically a fiction. If you really read into it, it's a fiction that he actually said anything close to the way that the laws are stated, as far as I can read. So he definitely doesn't refer to different laws of motion or his or claim them as his laws. But we have the basic law that the acceleration of an object, and it's actually getting quite close to the subscripts already, because it's already from the first law to the second law, we've got new concepts coming in of acceleration of an object is proportional to the force on that object. Okay, and we're going to have to develop that a little bit more. And inversely proportional to the mass. So if it's more massive of that object. So the way we say of object We don't say the word object in science. In physics, if it's something to do with Newton's laws of motion, we describe them as bodies. First two laws, the laws of inertia and the law of force and acceleration, we leave out the word mass for some reason. They deal with bodies. Third law deals with systems. Okay, so just get that into your head. A system is two bodies interacting together and touching each other. That's the law of momentum, the third law. The second law, we start off with acceleration subscript body, which we could call body one, equals, and this is where we go across. Now, Newton, in his actual works, used the word conjugate, is the Latin associated with it. So, equals the force subscript body divided by mass subscript body. When I say subscript, I'm getting you to visualize the word body written slightly lower down, so you don't actually, you know, subscript is not another way of saying, well, it is another way of saying of, but it's a sort of halfway between the audio and the actual visual writing equation. So one of the things we do with an equation, equations cannot actually be read out, spoken. They actually have to be observed. So this is one of these things that dubious on. I've never had to teach a visually impaired student, but I'm sure there's ways to go down. It's to write it down. And we can rearrange that F body equals M body times A body. And now, for a long time, this actually defined what mass was. Mass is a measure of a body's resistance to acceleration under a force. In fact, there's four angles to get in on mass, and I'll see if I can remember them. Five all up. The first four are descriptive, and the last one is analytical. So the first one is Newton's law. So mass is a mass of an object. It's its resistance to acceleration under a force. The mass of an object is its force generated in a gravitational field. Mass of an object is the amount of energy given out when it's hit by an appropriate amount of antimatter of the same mass. That's one of those things that I think you'll find that E equals MC squared. What is the amount of energy? It's the amount of energy released by mass, but you have to actually bring in some antimatter to do this. So there's a factor of two in there. Just chew on that for a while. That's up to three. So I've got inertia, gravitational, relativistic mass. And I'm going to have to stop here soon because I think someone's come up and it's going to not interfere. Or friends are always welcome. Then you've got the quantum mechanical one, which basically is not something applied to bulk bodies, but applied to fundamental particles. And it says their spatial size is inversely proportional to mass, and that sort of covers a whole another area of physics. And finally, you have the Higgs boson and the hypercharge and the calculation of mass. We've got into it, so it's the world's become a much more sophisticated place after 2012. I think that's when the Higgs boson's discovered, and it really got me thinking about gauge bosons and going on like this. But let's get back to the fundamentals of it. It's simply Newton's law. So what we're doing is saying that Newton described his laws or referred to his laws, but not deeply, but he referred to them with the tools he had at the time, which is language. And this is great because we start off with languages, kids start off with languages, and taking them on, taking people on the journey of from the language to the equations is a journey through into modern science. There is this confusion that the actual process of going from a verbal description to a mathematical description with some proofs, laboratory proofs, is proving a particular law. But ultimately, a law is a description, whereas a theory is an explanation. So that there are more descriptions, and as a descriptions, they can form part of a larger explanation, but they themselves are not explanations. So we're at the point now of F body equals M body, A body, acceleration of the body. So I'm leaving out the word subscript of it. So you've got to do here. Now, the thing about this is basically the F has to be... A is now a vector, so whereas in the first law we took forward and said that the velocity is the speed in a direction, acceleration is in a direction, and the force itself is a vector, but we have to get into this, unpack it a bit more. Really, there's no way to get around it, because we have to step across into the mathematics. We have to actually wave Newton goodbye and the verbal description goodbye, and actually put a sigma in front of it. A sigma, which is the sum of forces, the sum of external forces on a body equals the mass of the body times the acceleration of the body. So the acceleration will be a single vector. The sum of the forces will add up due to something called vector addition to a resultant force. And we could say resultant force, a simplification of what we call as a resultant force, is the unbalanced force. So sort of halfway through between there, we could step back and say the unbalanced force equals the mass times the acceleration. And I suppose you can have this is defined. So forces are in newtons, or newtons are breaking down capital N into kilograms, meters per second, as a unit of force. And so the Newton's first law is A body equals zero if F net, the sum of forces on the body, equals zero. Now we're going to say on the body. The Newton's second law, you could state it pretty much the same long-winded way, but it's really beginning to lose teaching value here. There was great teaching value in getting people to understand the Newton's words and take them across. It's beginning to lose teaching value here, and it's also a bit of a fraud in my view, because Newton described it not so much as an acceleration but changes of momentum, and in fact he dealt everything in terms of momentum. He was dealing with inertia and momentum and sort of skipped the idea of mass. So mezzanine way is unbalanced forces on an object equals the mass of the object times the acceleration of the object. So we're now introducing the word times. Newton didn't have the symbol time, and he didn't have the word times. He had conjugate. He may have had it in English, but in that Latin, which is given to us, it's there. And sort of the higher grade thing is this sum symbol. The sum of the forces acting on an object equals the resultant force, which is one single unbalanced force, equals the mass on the object times the acceleration of the object. And we go back, having taught with the acceleration of the object, by looking at that in terms of introducing the idea of acceleration in the first law, saying there's no acceleration, what acceleration is. And so there's several things you have to teach getting up there. Three things to teach, three or four things to teach, examples, Newton's description of it. Then you have to discuss acceleration, the measuring of acceleration, what acceleration looks like, what happens to it. And then force, so acceleration, you have to give examples of it, allow them to see it, that velocity at time, final minus velocity at time, initial, divided by the change in time, the elapsing of time, equals the acceleration of the object. But then for the resultant force, you have to, you can do it very simply in one dimension, but you have to have vectors, vector addition. So there's a lot to get in there, and how you actually address it has to be done rather sensitively. So you can teach people very much to answer a test. Like you can get them to a certain hill or height of understanding, but you may win in one area by making it very simple, easy to get on, but the future is hard to explain. So we'll just go over this again. Newton's first law is, mathematically speaking, and we're going to, this the aim is to have them have it as a drop back, that they can use some form of the verbal stuff, but don't emphasize it. A body equals zero if the sum of forces external to the body equals zero, or sum of forces on a body, the resultant force, equals the mass of the body times the acceleration of the body. Thanks for listening. I'll go on to the Newton's third law. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.